I have some questions for you. Do you experience in your life the fruits which are promised in our scriptures to those who follow the path of Krishna consciousness? Do you experience an increment, means increasing of love of Godhead? Are you by now a lover of God? If not so, do you experience ecstasy in Krishna consciousness? If not so, do you experience attachment to Krishna and detachment of material desires? Are you at least steady in your practice, or are you still struggling with so many anattas? Where are you at this moment in your practice of spiritual life? Do the fruits which you have heard about, love of Godhead, ecstasy, deep abiding taste, steadiness, freedom from the unwanted things, are these fruits with you, or are your hands and hearts still empty? This is a question I would love to ask all of you. How empty are you if you are empty? Are you a little full? Are you sometimes full? Or is there nothing, no change? Is there change maybe only when you are in the association of devotees, and when you leave them, you become like an ordinary person? Where are you? What is your spiritual achievement at this stage of Krishna consciousness? I would like you to reflect on these deep soul-searching questions, and then I would love to start my first part. It's not really a seminar, but my first of two lectures, I should say, where I will explain a secret in bhakti which I feel is so essential for your spiritual practice, that if you could understand and apply this secret within a relatively short time, you will feel that the cessation of unwanted desires, you would become steady in your spiritual practice, and you would feel more and more ecstasy in Krishna consciousness. This is a little bit what I have in my mind today, a rather big task, and I know you will now look very carefully if I hold my promises after challenging you so rudely at the beginning of the little talk. We will now start a Rāda-bhāṅga. You can think about this, and then we will hear the word of announcement.
After this hour,
Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. Yeah.
Shaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Nityai Namine Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Vacharine Nirvishesha Shunyavani Ashkarya
is something which needs exploration. And Prabhupada once spoke about Krishna consciousness. He called it an open secret. It's open in the sense that everyone can have access to it. Like an open door, everyone can go through it. But still it is a secret, the sense that it requires an exploration and a personal or individual discovery. The bhakti, which is the essence of Krishna consciousness, is an open secret in the sense that everyone can access it, he and she can engage with it, but still it is, requires a personal discovery, something which needs to be found by each one. In this lecture I would like to explain the three keys which can open this open secret for you, which can, and I do hope by sharing this type of knowledge that you will be encouraged and inspired, and that you will actually also open the secret for yourself. I must say, I personally became a member of this only 3 years ago, although by now I'm an old dinosaur here. I'm part of Krishna consciousness. I'm practicing this for 40, more than 40 years, not so good in counting, but only 3 years ago it became obvious to me by studying Rupa Goswami's Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu what I had missed all these years before. I had come to a point in my spiritual life where I really had to ask myself the question if this was really working. I mean, when we practice 40 plus years something, there should be some the promised fruits. And I became very, very eager when I had this personal question, how will this work, Krishna consciousness, in the sense that how will I become free from material desires and become just a lover of God, a God-intoxicated person who forgets the word? How will this work? So, based on this discovery, I would like to give these two presentations for you. But I first want to start in a very simple way. I want to continue that my questions left you. You know, whenever we practice something, we should ask ourselves, what is the goal of my practice? And then we should see, have I reached this practice? In Sanskrit language, the goal is called sadhya, the goal of the practice. The process of practice is called sadhana, by which the sadhya, the goal, can be reached. And the person who instructs you in both the goal and the practice which brings you to the goal is called sadhu. All these three words, sadhya, sadhana, and sadhu, start with sat. Sat means eternal. We are the sadhu who gives you a sadhya and tells you this is what you need to do. They talk all about eternal values, eternal achievements, something which time cannot take away from you any longer. Something very valuable, something which is ultimately spiritual and transcendental and has the qualities sat, chit and ananda. I remember once I was in New Delhi and I wanted to go to Vrindavan. I had heard so much about Sri Vrindavan Dham, and we got a taxi and we drove, and I heard, you know, you will drive from Delhi, then the area will become a little rural, and then there will be some towns like Faridabad, but then you will enter the beautiful atmosphere of Braj, and you will see peacocks and hear cuckoos and so on. I remember having heard this, so I went with we went with the taxi, and first it became a little foresty, and then we saw more houses and more houses. Then it was a congested city. We went further into the city, and finally the taxi stopped in Chandni Chowk, which is the main road of Delhi. We thought, wow, we didn't reach Vrindavan. We reached something else. The center of New Delhi. So when you practice Krishna consciousness and you see the peacocks are not coming and the cuckoos are not there, or let me say the promised results are not coming, you must You must ask yourself the question, am I really on the right road? Am I doing things properly? Are the results coming, or am I maybe going in the opposite direction? That's something which we unfortunately did when we turned that uninformed the Indian taxi driver who said, I know everything, and he knew nothing. This is a very important question, and you have a right to ask this question. You must ask this question. You must monitor your spiritual progress and see if you are developing freedom from material attachment. You must look out for becoming more steady in your life. You must look out, am I becoming do I develop what is called ashakti, you know, attachment for Krishna? Am I sometimes a little bit ecstatic, yes or no? And do I feel some love? This is important to check whether or not you are on the right road, or if you go in the opposite direction. It can happen to those who enter a spiritual movement that instead of moving forward, they become more depressed, they become more attached, they become more fragile in their ego, and they have a lot of ego problems. This can happen. It means that they have not managed to find the right path, and they have gone in the wrong direction, and something went terribly wrong, and they will be disappointed in their life, and bitter, and angry old men and women at the end. This can happen. It has happened. It happened. It is happening, and we naturally do not want to go in this direction. So, Krishna. I would like to ask you, how do you define bhakti? Krishna consciousness. What is your definition? What have you understood by now? Because of the loud noise of the AC, you will have to talk loud. The microphone, you see. Somehow with a loud voice, can would you like to try again with a loud voice? I can repeat.
Sarvapadi vinin muktam sattarasvena nirvanam Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhakti.
Yeah. You don't mind me to ask you a question on this? What did you just say in English?
Contamination, serving with the senses, serving to the Lord of all the senses.
That is something. What does this mean? this is very complicated for me. I'm from a very simple background. So maybe I should not put you on the spot. I see you getting nervous, and that's absolutely what I intend, not what I intend. Or maybe you're not used to Satchinanda Swami. Maybe I should switch off or switch down on a little bit more pleasant. Maybe if you're in America. My dear devotees, the reason why I'm shaking you a little bit is because I really care for your spiritual advancement. So what you said was wonderful, by the way, and I will just make it simple what you said. Our Mataji said we should serve Rishikesha, the Lord of the Senses, and she said in a very special way we should do that. We should be free from upadis. Upadis designation is a very difficult philosophical concept, and I will translate it. Upa means which is near, di means to the intelligence. And upadi is something which you think with your intelligence is true, but it's just a mental concept, like I'm a German, for instance. That's not true. It's just a concept. Some material identification is like this. So we should serve Krishna without thinking I'm a German, or I'm a man, or I'm a woman. This is how far you got before you got nervous. Any other definitions? Hare Krishna, is this Shesha Prabhu? I'm sorry, the old age has attacked my eyes, my glasses. I did not see you. Please.
The loving exchange between the Lord and the devotees is established in five different models.
Wow. The loving exchange between the Lord and his devotees, which is taking place in five different meadows, rasa. That's bhakti. I will be a little bit more pleasant now. Don't. anyone else? Very good. Shona Rishi.
Bhakti is an expansion of Srimati Radharani's Ladini potency, which she implants in the heart of devotee whom she sees qualified by dint of their devotees.
Wonderful. Also wonderful. Everything is wonderful. You have learned Vaishnavas. Bhakti is an expansion of Srimati Radharani's Ladini potency, which she bestows upon someone she deems qualified.
Yes. It gets fixed in their chitta, or their consciousness.
It gets fixed in their chitta. Aha! Here we understand bhakti to be a gift which is given by Srimati Radharani herself and by her special potency, the Kladini Shakti. Wow, here we get some. Yes, that's good. And it gets implanted in the chitta. It stays there. Yes. Now let us hear the wisdom of a child. Yes.
Bhakti is when you have a lot of love and you accept that we have a relationship with
you. Bhakti is when you have love for the Lord and you accept that we have a relationship with him, like he's our father, son, and so on. Wonderful. I will give you a few definitions. One is from Vyasadev. He says bhakti means a fond attachment. You are attached for worshipping the Lord in various ways. Narada Muni, his Gurudev, says bhakti means offering one's every act to the Supreme Lord. Whatever you do, that you offer for Krishna, and you feel extreme distress when you forget him. Now Shandil Yamuni, he's the guru of Nanda Maharaj, of Braj, famous father of Krishna, says bhakti means taking unobstructed pleasure in the self. Someone who is having bhakti, in other words, is absolutely blissful. Srila Rupa Goswami says something else, and Srila Madhusudan Sarasvati, very interesting personality, I will tell you a little bit about him in a second. Maybe towards the end of the lecture, says, when someone executes the activities of Bhagavad Dharma, when someone executes the activities of Bhagavad Dharma, it means his heart starts to melt and flows in streams towards the Supreme Lord. Then such tendencies are to be known as bhakti. You can imagine your heart to be like wax. Do I say it correctly? Wax.
Wax. Wax.
Wax. Even wax. Yes. Thank you. So, when you do kirtan, for instance, which is an activity, bhakti, then your heart will melt like wax. And it will start to move in a certain direction that is Krishna. This is bhakti, this movement of the melted heart towards Krishna. In this way, there are many approaches to bhakti, but as far as we as Gaudiya Vaishnavas are concerned, bhakti is best defined by Srila Rupa Goswami. He gives a definition of bhakti as a way which a total neophyte can do, and he gives a definition of bhakti as a goal which is reserved to those who are advanced souls. For beginners, bhakti means to apply the proper process. And I will start here. For the advanced, bhakti means to apply the process properly. In this lecture, we will cover the first definition. That is, to apply the proper process. The proper process entails, you could say, three keys, three elements which must be there in any effort which a devotee does in order to make that effort into bhakti. These three things are explained. Anyabhilashita shunyam jnana kamadhyanavritam anukul yena krishnanu shilanam bhakti uttama. It means the svarupa lakshanas, means that the real deciding qualities are first mentioned. That means bhakti is an activity which is something which is for Krishna, not for yourself, not for a friend, not for a devata. It is for Krishna only. The second is anushilana. It's an active engagement which entails the body. You do something with your body, you do something with your mind, and you do something with your voice. And the third is anukulyena. It must be done with a conscious intent which is to please Krishna. Only if you do or execute the process of Krishna consciousness with these three elements do your activities qualify as bhakti. For Krishna, it is done with the body, with the mind, with the voice. And third, it is done with the intention to give Krishna pleasure. Let me go quickly through the two, three things. It's for Krishna means that before you do an activity, let us say you cook. Before you do an activity, not afterwards, that means at the start, you must say, if you want to do this in Krishna consciousness, I'm cooking for Krishna. Sometimes we, Hare Krishnas, who are known for mechanical execution of spiritual life, are doing something and then, oh, I have to offer, oh God. if you are like this, you miss the point. You must, before you start getting the cooking ingredients together, say, this is for Krishna. Then, you do a chesta. Chesta means an effort where you use what is known in Sanskrit as the sadhana sharira. The body is known as a vehicle in spiritual life for sadhana, spiritual practice. You use consciously your body, your mind, and your voice, because you say prayers and you offer it, the preparation. You use that for Krishna. Now comes the next thing, which I think is most important. You need to ask yourself now the question, what I'm going to cook, will that please Krishna? You can think, well, I have to cook for my child who is a little ill in the stomach, I have to use oats and so on. But even then, you must say, I will not taste it before, it will please Krishna. I will do it in such a way, this preparation, that it pleases Krishna. Then, this is bhakti. And now, when you do this, my dear devotees, if you do the three meditations or three affirmations or three intentions, your whole life will change. What will happen is, as you do this, Bhakti Devi, the goddess of Bhakti, will see you. Bhakti Devi Srimati Radharani, and from Srimati Radharani, she will bless you. She will bless you. From Radha, the blessing will come. There are some very sweet energy, the Bhakti Shakti, will enter your heart and empower you. It's very simple, but if you don't do it, like most of the Hare Krishnas, I'm a little bit uncomfortable still, but soon I will be more pleasant. If you don't do this, you will get a little benefit, but not the full benefit. Now, bhakti has been described by Bhaktivinoda Thakur both as a way as well as a goal. For the beginner who starts on the path of bhakti, it will be not easy to stay always on this path. But at some time, he will reach the goal of bhakti, that is a melted heart which always flows Krishna just in a normal way and feels complete separation from Krishna, if that is not happening, and in the process of feeling that separation, that heart will think of Krishna already, and one is again in full Krishna consciousness. Bhakti is a way and is a goal, and I want to, because this concept is very important, give you a little analogy so that you can understand how something can be at the same time a way and a goal. Now, there was once a beggar who wanted to see gold. He had never seen this metal. And he approached the king and said, "King, can you show me gold?" He knew that the king had a royal treasury with vases and armory, shields, and gold coins and so on. And he wanted to see that. So the king looked at the beggar, smiled, and said, "Yes," he was a kind king, apparently. "You please walk up this staircase. When you reach the end of it, you can open a door, and as you look through the door, inside that room, everything you will see is pure gold." The beggar went up. He watched the staircase. It was quite interesting for him, and he had never seen such a staircase. And he came to the designated area, opened the door, and lo and behold, saw inside the royal treasury, and everything was out of gold. What was very interesting for him was, he said, "Payment." He turned around, he looked at the staircase and thought, "My God, that's also gold." But I didn't know it until I saw the concept gold, until I could identify the material as gold. And then I noticed that the thing which brought me to my goal was also made of the same substance, gold. This is the experience of a bhakta also. He or she starts with the process of bhakti, and as he or she reaches perfection, the goal, he or she begins to understand, "My God, what I did was already Krishna." An example. At the beginning, someone will start his kirtan and sing the holy name and fight with the usual obstructions like distraction, tiredness, existential boredom as he engages in kirtan and so on. And it is almost like an exquisite torture to sit for a couple of hours in kirtan. You will have the opportunity to try this in the Bhakti Sangha or the Sadhu Sangha festival. But then, as a devotee approaches the door of perfection, he and she will see, "My God, the holy name is Krishna. He's not different from Krishna. He's exactly the same." Tradition gives us a story in this connection of a young girl and a prince. This prince lived over the seven oceans beyond the 12 rivers. Traditional stories are here. And the young girl heard one day about this prince, and she understood, "I would have to cross 12 rivers and 7 oceans." Every day she heard more about the prince, until one day she heard a knock at the door, and a man was there and said, "I have come from the prince who has heard about your good qualities. Would you like to meet the prince?" "Wow," she said as she looked to the the English word,
emissary, or messenger.
And she left her straw house and traveled with him over the 12 rivers and set over the 7 oceans. And as they talked, she noticed how her heart became more and more attached to the messenger. And she thought, "Oh no, the prince calls me to come to him, to be united with him. But I fall in love with a servant of his. How unchaste and useless I am." This gave her great pain. She had heard so much about the benevolent prince. So as they approached, finally, as they approached the palace, the emissary or messenger said to her, just wait here, I'm coming in 1 minute or 5 minutes. And she waited and waited. Then someone else came and said, "The prince wants to see you." She felt, "Oh no, maybe the messenger told him everything and I will send back, I will be sent back over the 7 oceans and 12 rivers back to my straw hut. Oh no, I knew, never trust a woman, especially not me. I blew it." And she was brought to the throne. And what did she see? The messenger with the crown of the king, or crown of the prince. And she understood, all this time the prince and the messenger were the same. But because she didn't know in the very beginning, she thought, this is just a messenger. This is the experience of chanting Hare Krishna or doing any other process in bhakti. In the beginning, you will not recognize, but as you move on, some feelings of attachment will start, and then you will see, wow, I've been dealing with Krishna all the while. And you will beat your head and say, why was I so careless when I chanted? Why was I so careless in my service? Why was I so uninspired in my daily puja? Why did I fall asleep in kirtan? You will think like that. But that regret is good. That is separation. So, what we have discussed so far is three elements which need to be there and the something to make something bhakti. And we have said, although we do not recognize in the beginning that the path and the goal is the same, still as we continue going on the path, with these three elements intact, not without these three elements, because then we are not on the path, we are going somewhere else. We are going towards the land of frustration. We do something, but it will not reach bhakti. Then we do it properly, great results will come.
I would like to speak a little bit from the Bhagavatam. As you know, in the opening canto of the Bhagavatam, Narada Muni comes to Srila Vyasadeva. And amongst the other the many points he makes, he said, one should endeavor only for that end which is beyond the happiness and distress of this universe. And he says, Narada Muni says to Vyasadeva, on this path, you know, which brings you to that end, the love of Godhead, you know, which is beyond all the goals of this universe, don't worry. Even if you sometimes make mistakes, even if you sometimes don't act properly, you will reach eventually your goal. That is an important element which I want to bring to your mind. My dear devotees and my dear skeptics from America, bhakti is so wonderful. Even if you are a newcomer and not such a vibrant spiritualist, if you just try to apply the three formulas, miracles, expect miracles for you to happen. Even if it should happen that a devotee falls from this path of bhakti, it is supremely auspicious, in the words of Narada Muni, even if a devotee of Lord Hari should sometimes fall somehow or other, he certainly does not undergo material existence like others. Because a person who has once relished the taste of the lotus feet of the Lord, Sanskrit is rasagraha, he can do nothing but remember that ecstasy again and again. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says on the path of bhakti there is an experience of rasagraha. Rasa means a taste. Shesha Prabhu has informed us that bhakti has some mellows, taste. That rasagraha, I mean, graha means to capture. For instance, planets are called grahas. Navaratnas or Navagrahas. Because they capture you with their influence. You're in the hands of Shani. Congratulations. So bhakti also captures you and grasps you. And certain taste grasps you, which you cannot forget. If you come to Krishna conscious reunions, there you see many, many devotees, some of them not longer active 100%, but they will talk with tears in their eyes about the nostalgia of Krishna consciousness, the taste which they made. Hare Krishna Giriraj Maharaj, welcome in our assembly. Let us provide a sitting place for our Maharaj. Would you like to come next door to me to give me the pleasure of your close association? Or would you like to, would you prefer to sit somewhere? You plan, kindly decide. Yes, yes, it will give me some real pleasure. And also, our devotees can see a real devotee. Then there will be great benefit for them. Is it all right for you if I give Maharaj a brief overview of where we are?
Yes.
Yes. We are talking about bhakti, from the execution of bhakti, and we quoted from Rupa Goswami that if you consider bhakti as a way, then you just to walk on this way, you have to understand it's for Krishna. It's an activity with the body and the mind and the voice, and you must have it in your mind to please Krishna. So there's so many words. That's the essence. Now I will continue from that. Now this very simple formula, my dear devotees, can be executed by everyone. Maybe it cannot be executed for a long time. Maybe you can't sustain the consciousness that I'm doing this for Krishna. The body, you may not be able to use your body and mind for a long time, and you may be too selfish still in order to do it to please Krishna. But as long as you do and apply this formula, you are doing bhakti. And although there may be many imperfections in your life, as long as you can just maintain these three things, you will walk on the path to the palace of the Lord, if you consider that little story which I told you. I feel this is supremely encouraging, because it means that we can get a taste of transcendence even when we are greenhorns in spiritual life or not so adept in spiritual practice. And the verse of Narada Muni, which I would like to quote to you again, gives us the pramana, the proof that someone does already bhakti, even if his life is, if he is not pure, in other words, when he is on a platform where he can still fall. And he gets the rasagraha, he gets the taste of transcendence, which will increase, provided he does this bhakti properly. The verse speaks about a devotee who is not so good. Sometimes he may fall somehow or other, but still he does not undergo material existence like others, because a person who has once relished this taste, rasagraha, can do nothing but remember that ecstasy again and again. So therefore Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur comments that from the very beginning bhakti gives ras, or this transcendental taste. But of course, I come back to this point again and again, this does happen only if you have these three elements intact. That if you are, that means you can't be the do, never think devotee. You can't be that external imitator who just does things without any conscious intent inside of you. You can't do real bhakti proper if you switch off your heart you are not there with your mind. You don't do it for Krishna, you don't have this intention. And this point is so important. to do it with a conscious intent. The Prabhupada called our Murti Krishna consciousness. Many people have given many words. You must become conscious in doing this, and then only the process works. It's a switch in the unwilling life of a conditioned soul who suffers from being totally unspiritual, who has forgotten Krishna. You must put on the switch in the very beginning for Krishna. Jiva Goswami says, when you do an activity and at the end you offer it to Krishna, that's not bhakti, it's karma mixed with bhakti. But therefore you must, when you start doing something, say, I'm doing this for Krishna, to give him pleasure, and I will use my God-given sadhana sharira, my physical body and my mind, to do this. In other words, if you do this, there is no danger of being unsuccessful. Prabhupada says, once engaged in devotional service of the Lord, but will continue that service in all circumstances, because one has done what is called rasagraha, one has tasted transcendence. The example is Bharat Maharaj. I believe you are all familiar with him, or Ajamil. It's another example which Srila Prabhupada quotes. As a young man, he was ablaze with spiritual practice. He was a good Brahmin boy from a good family. He did all his pujas properly, but then he had a fall down with a prostitute and he really became bad. He became a murderer even, I have heard once, yes, and a robber and thief. But because he had that little taste, he continued. In youth he fell down, still he was saved by the Lord at the end, Prabhupada said. No? Because of this rasagraha, he had done bhakti, he had done something spiritual. I would like to end by giving you an example which I hope makes very clear the essence of this little presentation. In the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna gives a very well-known shloka, and this, to my knowledge, is the only verse which appears verbatim or verbatim. Verbatim in American pronunciation. It's actually a Latin word and it should be pronounced verbatim. Verbatim. Okay, let me become sober here again. There is one verse of the Bhagavad Gita which appears verbatim in the Bhagavata because it makes very clear what is bhakti. I think you all know this verse. If you know, please say it with me. I'll make a little orchestra here for you. Patnam pushpam phalam toyam yo bhakya prayasyati tadaham bhakyu haritam ashnami prayatatmana. If one offers me with love and devotion a leaf, a flower, fruit of water, I will accept it. The word bhakti here is repeated twice in this verse, and by this Krishna makes very clear that in this offering of a leaf, a flower, a fruit of water, something simple, it can be more complex also, but what is most important for him is the bhakti. If this is done, even by someone whose offering is still imperfect, Krishna will definitely accept it. And I would like to give you the context in which this verse appears, so that you can feel encouraged that even though your offerings may still be imperfect, you are doing the spiritual process if you have these three elements intact. It's about Sudama Vipra. Sudama Vipra, as most of us know, was a classmate of Lord Krishna in the Gurukul of Sandipani Muni. This Gurukul is, the site of the Gurukul is still there in the town Ujjain. At that time it was called Avantipur, and Lord Krishna took instructions from Sandipani Muni. There was one particular event which endeared him very much to the spiritual master. It was monsoon time, and there was clouds in the sky, and the wife of Sandipani Muni, the guru, saw that the supply of important firewood, which was necessary to keep the sacrificial fire burning, was going down. She asked the students, please go into the forest to get fresh firewood. But because there were the monsoon clouds, and I don't know if you have ever experienced Indian monsoon, it's really like a tornado, you know, like a tornado. I think you have a Mount Everest tornado, you have tornadoes in America. It's really dangerous. And so all the students are trembling and not willing to go to the forest. But Lord Krishna, although Sandipani Muni had said, never send the dark one. Lord Krishna went, that day Sandipani Muni was out for something, and he went and he took Sudama, a Brahmin boy, with him. And they went, they got the firewood, but they were surprised in the midst of the forest by a deluge of water. It became so intolerable that they had to take refuge at something which was a little like an island which stood out, and there was water all around, and it was terrible. And they stood there, Sudama and Krishna. Krishna was very... He was so devoted to Sandipani Muni that he never put the firewood down on the floor. He kept it on his head. And he stood there. And they must have talked many things throughout the night. And in the morning, Sandipani Muni asked his wife, where is that... Krishna had said, Jiva Goswami said, he wanted to be incognito. He says that Sandipani Muni said, how should I call you? He said, just call me the dark one, Syama. So then Krishna, Sandipani Muni, when he asked, where is the dark one? So why should I send him out? And it was monsoon, he has not come back. He has stayed the whole night there, out in the forest. Oh no, said Sandipani Muni, who was very attached to Lord Krishna. And he went with all his students, and somehow the water had gone already a little bit, and they found Krishna with the foot on their head. And Sandipani Muni just cried and said, you are the right disciple. Little did he know. And Sudama was with him. So,
So anyways, they separated ways. Sudama married, and he was very poor. Somehow he was not good at economics, and he was so poor that he became very skinny, and the veins protruded from his body. One day his wife said, "I can't tolerate this any longer. You now go to your rich friend in Dwaraka, Krishna, and you ask him for finance and support." But Sudama was so pure, he was poor and pure also. He said, I can't do this. He has captured my heart as an antithesis to asking for money. It's not my way. No, you must. Women can be very insistent as those who are married. No. And she went out to the neighbor, she begged for some little gift, and it was broken rice. And she said, "You take this and you go." And Sudama didn't want her trouble. He he had a little pouch in which he transported the rice, and he came. And on the way, he thought, "I'm coming to Krishna. But I'm wondering if he will still recognize me." So he went, he crossed the ocean, he went through the, I believe, seven gates, which were around Dwaraka. He went, and he asked, where does Krishna live? And he was told in 16,108 palaces. Now, how? This is very difficult. If you have an address times 16,108, where will you go? So he went to the first palace, and there, in the gate of the palace, he saw a lonely figure. You know who that was? Krishna! He had waited for Sudama, and he said, "Sudama, you have come." Krishna's voice was choking, and he took the hand of Krishna. He went into the palace, and he went right into his private rooms, you know, but not everyone can come. And he sat down Sudama, and he talked with him. "Sudama, do you remember that night? Where both of us..." "Yes, I remember." "The monsoon..." "Yes." "And you would not put the firewood down." "Yes, yes, yes." "Why?" "For Guruji, we do many things." So they were talking like this. And then Krishna thought for a while and said, "Sudama, you must have brought me something." And now Sudama knew that the rice which he had by now become sweat rice, not sweet rice. He had this pouch under the axle, under the armpit, and it was soaked. Not a bit to be offered to this great life. "Now I really have nothing." And Krishna went to the little pouch and he took the rice and he ate it. And he said, when he ate it, "If one offers me with love and devotion a leaf, a flower, a fruit, or water, I will accept it." And he then said, according to Vishwana Chakravarti Thakur, "Please listen to this, my dear devotees. I think you will get loose pimples of being moved. Krishna said, something may or may not be tasty and pleasing in its own right." For instance, sweat rice.
Something may or may not be tasty and pleasing in its own right. However, if my devotees offers it to me in love, with the expectation that I will enjoy it, I eat it with great pleasure without thinking twice about it. The verb ashnami, I eat, implies that Krishna eats even a flower which though I eat implies that Krishna eats even a flower which though acceptable is not edible, bewildered as he is by the ecstatic love he feels for his devotee. Just think about this. Have you ever ate a flower? Krishna eats a flower if it's offered which is not edible. There are some flowers which can be eaten in India, I heard, but usually, I mean, this wouldn't be edible. He eats it if it is offered with love and devotion. And this glorifies the process of bhakti. But if you never do bhakti because you think it's not it's for advanced people, you won't get this experience of pleasing Krishna, because he wants bhakti. And for bhakti to be bhakti, it's simple. You can do it. It's proper that even a child can do it. You do something for Krishna. You do it with your body, your mind, and your words, and you do it with the intention to please Krishna. Let's be practical, my dear devotees, not theoretical. At the moment, the world famous Madhava will sing with us. Now you will have a chance to make the singing a process of bhakti, or something which is just a singing exercise which will, for those who are not singers, after some time bore you and you will leave the room. You can make it into a very good devotional experience if before you sit down you say, this will be now for Krishna. I will now use my voice to sing for Krishna, and I will sing in a way that pleases him. I will be attentive. And when you do this, while you do kirtan, you will most probably have a breakthrough experience. You might feel, I have started my bhakti life today. I'm serious about this, because I felt like this morning. I was checking my rounds, a little jet-lagged, and all of a sudden I thought, well, my God, today I will address the devotees about bhakti, and what am I doing here? No sure. No sure, it's a German word for all these imitations of bad chanting, you know. Ram Ram Shikshak and so on. You say, this is what you say in American language, we say no sure in German language. So I said, I must change this, and this is now for Krishna. Sit down properly, Sachinandan Swami. You do this now. You get your voice together, your pronunciation together, and you do this now to please Krishna. And I felt I have just now started my chanting practice. It makes such a fundamental difference, because the difference, in fact, is fundamental. It's a switch in the consciousness. But if you stay, like most of your Hare Krishnas do, on the automatic pilot all your life, just doing things mechanically, it will not work for you. You will become a bitter, frustrated dinosauria. Hare Krishna. Please do not accept my offensive language. It was just meant to shake you a little up. I know you might forget many things of this lecture because we suffer from overdoses of philosophy, but you will not forget that this man was a little offensive, and then you might remember what he tried to tell you. So this was the first of two lectures. It was making a big subject, trying to be compromised. Now what we will learn in the second lecture, which will be I think 26th on Monday, same time, same place, we will learn how to, this was about the proper path, you know, of bhakti. Now the next thing is how to do bhakti properly. Bhakti is like gold from the beginning, but we need to apply some heat to it and free it from the contaminations of jnana and karma. Or as Manasi Ganga said, we need to purify it from the upadis, material contaminations. And that we will learn in the second lecture. I want to now end here. I would like to see if there are a few questions, and then we will do our bhakti imbued kirtan. Here I see the first question. Are there other questions also? Here's the second question. Okay, let us start with the two. Yes. What is your name again? Madame Gopal, I believe.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, Madame Gopal.
So the three keys, the first key is to do it for Krishna, and the third one is to do it to please Krishna. The third one seems to automatically imply the first one. Can it just be the two keys, or is there some fundamental difference between the first and the third?
Yeah, there is a big difference. You can do something for Krishna without pleasing him. Like, I can give you prasadam because I have to. and not please you. A very nice point is made in the third canto. There, meditation on the super soul is explained. Beautiful meditations, how the yogi should meditate in the heart about the feet of the Lord and go upwards and finally end in the smile of the Lord, which becomes more elongated so that the two teeth will show, and then he should at the end meditate about the laughter of the Lord. Prabhupada said, of all the Lord's gifts, his smile to the devotees is the highest gift. So it's a very devotional meditation actually to do this. But then the verses continue, and then the yogi takes off his mind from the Lord again. Same thing happens in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam, where we again find a meditation on the super soul. And again it says, after doing this, the yogi should bring his mind first into the sky, and then everything vanishes. all the imagery vanishes. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, this is an example of someone who thinks of Krishna without pleasing him. He moves back from Krishna, and this should not be done for Bhakta. The yogis do this because they may think of God in the heart, but they have a selfish, self-centered concern in them. And therefore they bring their mind away from Krishna, much like many of us do. It's absolutely necessary if you want to not just perform yoga, yoga mishra, you know, where you mix some bhakti in your yoga, then you really think of pleasing and not being self-centered. You can do something for someone without really thinking of his pleasure. You know, and even go to the extent of a yogi who then just drops the whole thing, and he got what he wanted, some ecstasy by perceiving something spiritual in his heart.
Thank you for a nice elaboration on these three points. We have a conception of bhakti as a deity also. We say bhakti deity hai, we say mahari ki hai. So, how we could relate this to this process of bhakti as a deity? As a person?
When we say bhakti deity, there is some very important Thakur thing. When we say Bhakti Devi, we refer to an extension of Srimati Radharani. Tulsi is in a different tattva. She is a Vrinda Devi. Vrinda Devi comes into this world as the Tulsi plant. So we say Vrinda Devi Tulasi Devi ki jai, and Bhakti Devi should not be this. I have a feedback which was made in Russia. You know, it says here Vrinda Devi, and it says Tulasi Devi, Tulasi Maharani, and then Vrinda Devi. But here it also said Bhakti Devi, and this was a mistake in Tattva, and we had to remove the Bhakti Devi. It tells this Akhati Vivek tells to be in the Dharam for 25 rupees. It's not correct. Yes, she is an extension Bhakti Devi of Srimati Radharani. And you might see in many deities the Radharani's head is offered like this for blessing. She gives blessing. And that blessing is in bhakti. No? She gives blessing of bhakti. And the composition of this goddess, Bhakti Devi, is Ladini and Sankhya. Two energies are in that goddess, and when we are blessed by Srimati Radharani with this bhakti, then this bhakti shakti will come into our heart and inspire us. For instance, in kirtan, we may feel bhakti, and we may rise, and we may dance. And this is not an ordinary dancing, but it is dancing under the guidance of the eternal energy. Yes, your good name, please.
Ananda Gopal
Prabhu. Yes.
The three points that you were making seem like they could be mapped to sambandha, abhideya, prayojan, if we internalize the mood with the proper understanding licenses are given for the facility of service for Krishna, then this is how we tread the path, the Abhidhamma. And then finally, if we're really truly pleasing Krishna, then we have attained the goal, or are in the process of attaining the goal. But that's the only way we know, because we're getting the reciprocation. And so at the highest level, I can see how that is inspiration for all of what we do. So I wanted to hear if you felt the same way.
Wonderful. Ananda Gopal, you are an academically well-versed Vaishnava, or?
I just have my group.
Yeah. It's a very interesting concept. I never thought of it like this, but Krishna's Abhantatattva and Jiva, then the process, you do something with Abhidhya and this Prayojana, and you really go into it with the love of Krishna. I would love to see our... Do you have any comment on this, Giriraj Maharaj? Because you're more... should we... You return the microphone?
Krishna, that's a good point, that we have to understand I'm eternal servant of Krishna, so that's sambandha, and then engaging in the service of Krishna with body, mind and words, that's bhakti, sadhana bhakti, abhideya. And then the pleasing Krishna. This is a little subtle point, because we can please Krishna at any stage. And Prayojana, Krishna prema, at that stage we please Krishna more. But we cannot say that before Prayojana we are unable to please Krishna, because actually, in properly conceived and executed bhakti, we do please Krishna all along. So, I hope that will please you and I.
Wonderful, thank you.
Can you see how Giriraj Maharaj is very, really, I don't want to embarrass you, but you are very complex subject matters. You can explain very succinct things. So, I don't have the clarification. Yeah. Here's the child is there. Yes, your good name, please.
Utkrish.
Wonderful.
How is the Bhagavad Gita, how is it related to us or the devotee having the concept or having the feeling of the beginning of
the beginning? How it's related to a devotee who's at the beginning? Yeah, the Bhakti Lata Beach is a seed which is implanted in the consciousness of the living being. And this seed refers to two things. Sometimes chickpeas, they have two sides, one left and one right side. And so in the same way, the seed of Bhakti has two elements in it. It's knowledge about sambandha, our relationship, and knowledge about the process which we perform.
So when that is given by the Sutta Master, and it has to be deeply planted by us into the consciousness, just like any gardening. A gardener will know you need to plant the seed very deep, otherwise winds can come or birds which peck the seed and it goes away. So our task is, once we have received the seed, to make sure that it goes deep into the heart, in the chetana, the conscious, the chitta actually. Very important. And every day we must put it there so that the birds don't steal it and the winds don't blow it away. And then this grows. And grows in the plant and ultimately takes shelter at the lotus feet of Krishna. That's the prayojana. What helps us to protect the seed? That there is a mixture of two. Your own effort to really take it to heart and apply it, and then these Sangha or association of devotees. In our process, we really need Sangha association. Without it, it can go. And the example of it is Bharat Maharaj, who had everything intact. He even had Baba Bhakti, that was his level. But he did not have association in the midst of the forest with devotees. Not there. I thank you all very much. If there are further questions, I hope we will have another opportunity to meet. But I feel now we should go to the next part of the program, which is chanting the holy name. I will request Madhava Prabhu to set up. Sorry? Oh,
please. From the very beginning, there is a devotee in the back corner who had his hand up, and I think maybe you just didn't see him. That was all.
Yes, there is a devotee in the very corner who had his hand up from the very beginning. I heard.
Okay.
Sorry?
If it is late, that's fine. I can ask you.
No, we must serve you. No. Why do you laugh? It is a serious point of Vaishnava theology. Yesterday, Irish Maharaj said about this. Yes.
I was just curious about that. Initially, at the current state of time, I do not realize my relationship with Krishna. Although theoretically I know that I am serving the Lord, but I have no realization. So sometimes, my intentions are selfish.
Your intention?
My intention is selfish,
yes.
Selfish because I'm used to it, conditioned soul. So how do I apply this attitude of that I'm doing this for pleasing Krishna, while I always already have this selfish intention, which I cannot get it off? So how do I practically say that this activity, I'm doing this to please the Lord? At the same time, I may have nutritious behavior of having a selfish intention, to enjoy something. How do I genuinely do that?
First of all, I really feel in our movement we need to say we have a relationship with Krishna. Everyone has it. I have noticed many devotees never think about this, but you have one. It may not yet be in full bloom, but there is something there, and you have started this path because you want God realization,
and something is given in you. So in order to really see, really be able to do something for Krishna, you must hear a little bit more who Krishna is. This is, you must get to know. From your, the color of your dhoti, I assume that you are married, is that correct? So, at one stage, you must have realized I have a relationship to this person. It was very vague, maybe. Maybe it was from the distance, maybe your parents have arranged it, but at one stage, a very vague concept was there in your heart. This person is, I have something to do with her. There is some relationship. And then, somehow, you both did something, or something happened, so then you became more aware of the qualities. So that by now, you know your wife pretty well, and she knows you very well. And Prabhupada gave such an example about our relationship. He said, in the beginning, a girl is promised in Indian families to a boy, and the girl is only sometimes 5 years or 6 years old. And at that time, she most probably thinks all boys are fools because they are so gross, you know, they play football. And the boys think all women are just from a different planet. You can't talk with them. And little boys are like this. They are highly uninterested. I mean, opposed to it. The old people, for them it is different. But boys are very... They think, what is wrong with these people? Women, you know, and women think like this about... Boy, so the relationship is very distant. There is no affection, nothing there. It can't be. But now the parents, knowing that the girl will come into a situation where she will feel for men and vice versa, that something is arranged. She comes maybe once a month with a plate of sandwich, and they... And still, there is no feeling between the two. It's just she comes and brings it and is happy when she is out of the room again and can talk to her friends, you know. But after some time of doing this again and again, there will be a time when she blushes and he feels, wow, there's some electricity in the room. Now something has changed there. And then it can a relationship as the way we are accustomed to, where they talk to each other, solve things, go through life, support each other, have a family, and all these things start. But they are not in the beginning there. Still there is a relationship. So in the same way, maybe now you go to the altar with your plate and you think, hopefully I'm soon out of the altar and can go home in my nice cherry-colored car and so on and so forth. But there is already a relationship there. You cannot deny that there is something. He is your Lord. And Bhakti starts when you become just aware of this. There is a relationship, and doing this for Krishna now, I should now be good, I should not run out of the altar, and you do this. I'm doing this for Krishna, and I want to please him. I don't want to do it like with an inner resistance and an inner plan to run out of the altar as soon as possible. And you have to discipline yourself to make this a bhakti experience on the other. And it will come. It will come
more and more and more.
Like in this traditional example which Srila Prabhupada answered. Again. Hare Krishna, I thank you very much. Once again, so we will start now with Madhavapu. I really request you to now not do what you usually do after a lecture. Switch off whatever you heard. It's not of relevance any longer. Now you must practice this very much. You will now sing for Krishna with the intention to please Him. You will use your God-given voice. It's very important. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Okay, I don't really like to come to the door also.